going on down there?
Ladies and gentlemen, we are here with WTF Primetime! Welcome to our live show here at the Phillips Arena down in Greenville, North Carolina. I am joined today by Gog Dog.
Hi.
Hi! And I'm also joined today by Aaron Smith.
With all new hardware. Except for the stuff that isn't new.
But. Hardcore hardware. And also joined by Omegas Prime!
I spent all day at the county fair and cannot feel my feet.
Good, because you don't need them to do this podcast.
Well, maybe you don't.
Yeah, you float. That's all you gotta do. In fact, you gotta float like a badass, like somebody who debuted in the episode of WTF Prime, because that's the name of the show now, that we're gonna talk about. We're talking about, what is this, episode 5, 6, 7, 8, Con Job, or as I like to call it, Scraplets. This episode debuted Wheeljack, so I thought that we could open up just by discussing how we thought Wheeljack was delivered. I do know I saw some reactions along the lines of, oh my god, it's Drift. Personally, I thought Wheeljack was okay. He wasn't an inventor. He was a former wrecker type. And I didn't really see anything wrong with how he was delivered myself. There's nothing egregious that offended me. Maybe he was a little bit generically badass, but he also did not get, spoilers. the real version of him did not get a humongous amount of screen time, although the one we saw was supposed to be quite representative of him. But, I don't know, I wasn't thinking, like, this is the best Wheeljack ever. I wasn't thinking I'm offended because this Wheeljack's horrible. I just thought, hey, it's a badass dude. I can live with one of those being in the show. Gog, how did you take Wheeljack?
I liked him. Personality-wise, yeah, he's basically an entirely new character. Physically, I think they did a really good representation of making an updated version of Wheeljack. There's no mistaking that that's Wheeljack when you look at him. Was very pleasantly surprised at the character, I think, overall. Didn't see an alt mode. They did mention that he didn't scan one, but at the same time, I assume he has one of some sort, but didn't. I'm sure that'll come up later. Drift. Drift isn't the only Transformer that's ever had swords, so... I mean, I understand, and it's people who say that aren't wrong at all, but... and in fact, in some ways, it's a compliment. The only thing he has in common with Drift is dual-wielding swords. Personality-wise, he's nothing like Drift. Drift is maybe a little brooding, strong, silent type, and Wheeljack is anything but. He's all about, let's head first into the action, we're going to talk trash while we're doing it, because I can back it up. he was great. I thought his character design was great. I really liked the face. Didn't bother me that he didn't have the little flashy ears, didn't need it. I really like the design on him. He has... Like we were saying before last time with the Autobots all having a lot of personality, Wheeljack is really no different. You could kind of get a feel for who he was by his design and his facial expressions and features. And
yeah, and he even had like a little bit of a burly age thing in that. I kind of liked that he didn't have a hunchback, but you know his shoulders were pretty big, and I kind of liked that he was sort of buffed out physically to match his persona to a degree, but not overly buffed. I mostly noticed it when he was looking up at Prime. I was like, his head's kind of close to his shoulders, but I don't mind. Omegas, how did you take Wheeljack?
I don't know, really. Most of the time we saw him, he was not the real Wheeljack, and he does kind of come off a little bit I don't know, maybe a little bit too hard of trying to be the badass who is just so damn good at what he does. It's a little hard. I mean, considering we had an imposter the whole episode, it is a little hard to pin down exactly who the character of Wheeljack is. And honestly, what's presented so far, I'm kind of torn on just what I would think of him, because I don't know. I'm kind of colored by the fact that it looks so much like the original Wheeljack, but has absolutely no bearing on him whatsoever. I mean, the character is brand new, mm-hmm. and in a way, maybe a little generic.
Do you feel that maybe, because I think this might be happening with me, do you think it might be that your view of him is a little bit colored both by the imposter thing and his taking leave right afterwards?
Possibly. We really have no opportunity to actually get to know him. Whereas, you know, like right now, he's coming off, at least to me, kind of thin. Because, you know, he's a little bit one note. He's really good and really boastful about it. And that's about it. I mean, if we see him down the line, I'd like to see why he drifts from place to place.
Yeah, you said drift.
Uh-huh. Oh, ha 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 ha.
Cliff Jumper was in a lot of ways the same way as well, though. He went headfirst into battle with a smile on his face and was bragging about how he was going to kick everybody's butt and mm-hmm. really didn't have a care in the world. So
I think that's one of those things that also makes me look forward to if they follow up on the idea of perhaps flashing back to Cliff Jumper. Guys like that are kind of like characters where I'm like, all right, I dig it, and I really want you to show me what they do when they're not doing what they do, because that's where I think they have really good roots, but I don't know what happens, you know, when they're not in the battlefield quite yet.
Right. No, I'm withholding full judgment on Wheeljack until we see him again.
Mm-hmm. Aaron, how do you feel about Wheeljack, or Jackie, as Bulkhead so affectionately called him?
Counterpoint, I think we could get a lot of who Wheeljack at least was at one point through Bulkhead.
I mean, listening to much,
yeah. Bulkhead has such a man crush on Jackie.
Jackie.
It's, you know... I think a lot of his reactions, and that's why the, you know, his Bulkhead being pretty smart about figuring out that the Jackie that was there, Wheeljack, was not Wheeljack, but instead, what was it, Makeshift?
Yes, Makeshift.
Yep. You know, the whole, you know, well, why don't you tell us about you and I at the battle for Darkmount Pass? Or Battle of Darkmount Pass, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that everything up to there, kind of Bulkhead's reactions towards him, and then saying that, you know, Wheeljack was pretty good up against himself. Because it's always the mirror matches that are the most difficult, right?
Yeah.
But that, and it was the one thing that I think could have been done, you know, when he had his battle mask come on, I think that just when he said whatever, having a even just like a gleam or something happen off of his like face wing things would have been a perfect look. Okay, we know the fanboys want this. Let's just give them one little flash of something, and then we don't ever have to deal with it again.
You were holding out for light up ears.
Yeah, maybe not like full on crazy light up ears.
Holding the torch out for them.
Yeah, but I don't know. I did like the fact though that on and around his mouth, he had like it was cracked, but made it look like scars on his face.
That was cool.
Yeah. Really did add to the badassery level of Wheeljack, especially since now him and Bulkhead are wreckers.
Mm-hmm. That was another interesting thing to bring in too. Was after what was it like the last couple episodes? We've had Scraplets, we had the line Emperor of Destruction. Now we've had Wreckers and Darkmount Pass. It's kind of like. Yeah. Even if this is somehow just some dudes reading through a book of names, please keep reading that book of names.
Well, that was another thing, is they're at base Omega 1.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So 1 would be, like, the best, or Supreme. Omega Supreme, oh my god, it's in there.
He's in Prime, confirmed. Tell your friends, put it in the wiki.
well, the Scraplets were eating the base. It must be alive.
Yeah. Although I did really like the kind of casual continuity between the episodes.
Little off our tangent, but yeah, that actually made me really that actually made me want to eat a little bit of crow on my saying that Scrap Heap was such a one-off episode, because clearly it wasn't. I was wrong, and I like that.
Well, I think that's a good way to keep things arcing and working together.
Definitely, yeah.
You know, even if it is just a little thing like that, and that the space bridge was acting up, but it's a good way for the writers maybe to keep the writers honest. And not just get into Monster of the Week territory.
And what really worked about that Scraplet line is that if the Scraplet episode had never happened, that line would still be just fine as a throwaway line.
Right.
That I thought was really effective. What it meant is that it did the thing of having a casual continuity, but as you said, it's a casual one. So it's not like he says Scraplets and it's like, tune in last week to find out what he's talking about. It's just like, Scraplets been, you know, after the Scraplet infestation, everything's been wonky. And you're like, oh, infestation? Must have just had bugs of some kind. It's like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not, it's where, you know, some shows that get into arcs get real dependent on, well, look, if you haven't seen the last 32 Unicron shows, trilogy. there's no point in you watching this show. If you turn this show on, you're going to have no idea what's going on for 30 minutes. Whereas with that continuity, yes, what happened in the past affects what happened now, but not to the point where it's, would lock up a story if you didn't know it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because of the Scraplets, Ratchet had to defrag the ground bridge, so it kept makeshift there. So what happened with the Scraplets is important to what happened here, but it's not the essential that you know.
It's not the crux of... Yeah.
The crux of the last episode became the causation for this episode on something, which... It's nice, and they could have come up with something else to jam up the space bridge for a little bit, so it's not essential, just interesting that they did it that way.
I was actually going to bring that up as a talking point. Gog or Omegas, either of you have any thoughts on the casual continuity, as Aaron put it, of Scraplets getting referenced? Or
I actually had it written down as well.
Yeah,
it was a neat little thing that grabbed me was the little throwaway line, but it makes you feel like that it's a continuing story. So while it's not going full on serialized storytelling, one leading into the next, it still makes you feel like it's not just a G1 style, everything resets every week, and that the characters do acknowledge what happens, even if it's small from episode to episode. And it's a nice touch, and I hope we continue to see that.
It's a great way to reward you for regular viewing without punishing you for not regular viewing, I think.
Yeah, it's a nice way of avoiding the old episodic thing of, well, these episodes could air in any order and you would not be lost whatsoever. It's more along the lines of, well, okay, there is a definite order to things, even though it's not an overt one, which is a nice way of doing it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really... To me, my favorite shows are ones with a loose continuity, but one where you aren't gonna be at a weak point just for coming in late. Like, they're not gonna smack you for being late, but they're gonna reward you for going back and figuring out what all happened beforehand. I just wanted to bring up, I'm not sure if he's really someone we're gonna see again, but from what we saw, what did you guys think of the character, or at least character concept, of Makeshift? Because that kind of came out of nowhere for me, of like, when they said Makeshift, and I was like, who? And then Tentacle goes towards shadowy guy with a faceplate, and he starts, his body starts changing shape, and I was like, I didn't expect that.
Yeah. I don't know if I like the fact that he's now just a throwaway character.
Well, this seems to have actually been a bit of an argument here and there, but my initial reaction was, oh, he was only here for this episode, but, you know, maybe... He'll pop up again.
It's a really easy character to use, because all you need are the other models that are already produced. Even though
I don't see that one popping up, because the whole thing was he accomplished his mission.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Found their secret to their base, and before he could utter it, the bomb went off, destroying him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if he is alive, that kind of undermines that whole.
That's very true. And also, it's worth noting that his voice actor was Kevin Michael Richards. Richardson? I forget. You know, Bulkhead's voice actor. Which to me actually kind of implies that, you know, he's only going to be here for one episode, so can we just use somebody who's already on the cast?
I could see him maybe, I don't know, it'd kind of be scary if he became a regular, not quite, Erraticon.
Yeah.
You know, a step up from that, but then you have to deal with the potential of everybody is, you know, everybody could be a makeshift copy, so I don't, it's good. I think that just killing him off and being done with that potentiality is a good thing.
Yeah. It, and once again, life and death in this show.
Yeah.
Because even though, I mean, and I knew something like this was going to happen from when we saw the preview, because if the whole setup for the episode is Wheeljack comes out of space and Bulkhead is ecstatic to see him and bear hugs him, and you know something is going to go very badly and it's going to involve their relationship. And I knew that from right off the bat, and I'm like, I hope Wheeljack doesn't turn evil, or I hope Wheeljack survives the episode.
I was actually, when they reveal Wheeljack chained up in the ship, and then he mouths off to Starscream, and Starscream starts pulling his arm back, I was like, this feels familiar! And then Soundwave went like, no, don't kill this one.
Soundwave caught that, like, you don't want
to
do that.
I was like, thanks, Soundwave. I was like, if I needed another reason to love Soundwave, he prevented Wheeljack from getting cliff jumpered.
Once again, everything on the Decepticon side runs on Soundwave's.
He's really in charge without being in charge. The
creepy tentacle thing to plug in to makeshift to make him shift.
Mm-hmm.
But that's Soundwave appears to be a Swiss Army knife.
I dig it myself, but the one thing actually. The only thing that I found strange about makeshift was he unfortunately does raise the question that I have trouble arguing against, which is, if makeshift has been around this whole time, why didn't they use him earlier to copy blah blah blah?
I thought about that, and it makes really perfect sense, because if the Decepticons have this weapon, they really do not want to reveal it, even in the slightest bit, until the perfect opportunity arises, because once the Autobots know that they have someone on their team that can do that, their defenses are going to go way up really fast. And so they obviously didn't even suspect anything like that until Wheeljack started getting some pretty important details wrong and people started catching on. And that was only because that was because of the Pole Scraplets thing. It actually did them a favor, because if that ground bridge had been in working order from the start, he would have accomplished his mission right off the bat. So the Scraplet infestation probably saved their lives, or at least Wheeljack's. He would have gone in and done the thing, and it was the fact that those Scraplets had caused the damage, and he had to stay undercover for much longer than he had anticipated he would have to, and it was them having to spend that extended period of time with him where people started catching on to things not being right. And if it wasn't for that, it would have been over before they suspected anything.
Make a good point, though, that I hadn't considered the whole thing of like them ramping up defenses once they know the possibility of a spy is there, because that was to me the bottomless fire extinguisher of the episode for me was like. You know, strange that he only just popped up, but you make a very good point.
Yeah, I know if I was in a military situation like that, and I had a character who had that special ability, and it wasn't something that we could all do, then that's absolutely something you do not want to reveal until you're ready to play your card. Maybe it was and I'm glad they did it now on episode 7 or 8. Of the regular season, only 3, because then when things got really crazy and all of a sudden makeshift comes out of nowhere in, say, the end of season 1 or season 3, then I think it would have been a little more, that's a little odd that this dude has been around for 3 seasons and never been used.
I think one thing that really helps me buy the idea is because his use came in conjunction with an Autobot arriving on Earth, and it's implied to me in the show that it's been at least 5 years, if not like 15 years, I think if I recall right, since any Autobots have arrived on Earth. Like, it's been a very long time since they've had someone show up on Earth, so I can see where that comes from, to a degree.
Well, there's a there's really only one counterpoint here, and they actually did have the opportunity to use makeshift already when they had captured Cliffjumper.
That that might be why Soundwave caught Starscream's arm as well.
Yeah.
In that, you know, hey, guess what you did last time? You
like, well, but at the same time, though, Starscream wasn't in charge there. That was
That's true.
Well, yeah, I guess he kind of was, but it was he may have intended to use him, and Megatron coming back kind of put a wrench in that.
Because Megatron is still all in the "I want an army of zombies."
Yeah. I mean, this is again, hey, guess what I keep saying? This would be a perfect question to ask the writers at a convention, because it kind of enters into, like, we're kind of going like, well, what might have an off-screen motivation been? And I think we've done pretty well with all the info we've got, but now I want to sit down with dudes and go like, "Hey, so what was makeshift's thing?" You think we're going to get a makeshift toy?
I was actually thinking about that. That would be interesting.
Just buy a second wheeljack.
If you could have, like, different armor, or even, because I was thinking, like, the old school punch counter punch, or even the new punch counter punch is kind of two robot modes ish.
That's true.
But I think it would be a lot harder with modern toy aesthetics to hide a second robot in there. Without it being just like the, you know, animated sound wave where...
Well, you know, it's funny.
He can copy anybody as long as the other person is kind of shorter and has different things on his shoulders.
What's funny is Generations Wheeljack actually kind of is based on a mold with two slightly different transformations for the robot mode.
Yeah.
Makeshift, who knows? We probably won't see him again. And that's okay. Let's get the ball rolling on talking points. Aaron brought up actually the first one I was going to bring up, so I'll just pass things over to Gog.
I guess we mentioned it a little bit, but the Wreckers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting point too, that or line that RC had stated, that I think, what were they playing the game, lobbying or something, like they
Lob.
Were
yeah.
Lob, and RC said the line, like, yeah, it's a game that's played by the Cybertronian warrior class, which I thought was interesting, and it's definitely a little bit of a contrast to animated Bulkhead, who was kind of a washout when it came to being in the Elite Guard, and ended up being a space bridge repair technician. And this Bulkhead is obviously not that. He is a straight up. He is a warrior, and I thought that mixed really well too with the pilot episode, where we see RC fighting against the Eradicons and kind of being a little bit overwhelmed, and Bumblebee coming in and doing a little bit better with those two. Once Bulkhead showed up, the Eradicons basically looked at each other and just ran off.
Mm-hmm.
So Bulkhead is the competent fighter powerhouse of the group, and it's been, I think that so far matches up to what we've seen with him so far in his representation. But
mm-hmm.
I thought that was a neat way to represent him like that. But yeah, the Wreckers, and I wonder if we will see any more of these guys. Probably not. But
I thought also that it in that scene you're talking about, it also means that if it's known that he is among the Wreckers, that could you know, play into a whole lot of the ways that Eradicons are reacting to him, now that we know that they are living things themselves to a degree. You know,
even though they're disposable.
Two of them, you know, they're cornering these, you know, Bumblebee and RC, then it's like, oh my god, it's Bulkhead of the Wreckers, and he's bigger than us.
I don't know. I wasn't quite sure if it was like the Wreckers, or if it'd be just like saying, you know, First Infantry, where, you know, they're a group, versus in previous universes, the Wreckers have always been like, for military, being like a Navy SEAL or on some special team thing like that, where I'd like to see in reality what the Wreckers is in Primeverse.
Well, it's also nice that, you know, three episodes into the first season outside of the premiere, we're getting world building stuff like this. Like now we know what Autobot military's guys do as recreation. They throw stuff at each other.
Hunk of steel at each other's head.
And we know that there's a unit out there, or at least some designation out there called Wreckers. Like we're getting, I like that they're going for that world building thing, because that's part of what I loved about a lot of animated, especially later on. Anyone else have any stuff to say about the Wreckers?
No, other than I'd say that Wheeljack does give them good credit in his landing fight scene, ripping off one Eradicon's limb to use as a club on another one.
Yeah, he's got quite a good track record.
Appears to have that that makeshift can-do ability.
Mm-hmm. And he also, I was happy to see he escaped the Wrecker's curse of getting killed off.
So far.
That really helped out. Yeah, so far. Well,
thanks to Soundwave.
Thanks. Yeah, Soundwave has saved an Autobot. I got a kick out of that.
Maybe Soundwave's a double agent.
Ho! don't speculate too far now. Oh my god.
Yeah.
And reel it back in. Omegas!
As far as I want to.
I find it ironic Vangelis is saying don't speculate about Soundwave.
I don't know what you're talking about. Omegas, do you have a talking point you'd like to bring up?
Let's see, we've actually touched on a lot of the notes I've already taken here.
We are an all-encompassing podcast production, that's why.
One little thing I liked about the episode, and it's more just, I'm hesitant to use the word filler.
Careful!
Nothing is filler. It is all important.
One-shot episodes.
Something that, I don't know, it just seemed like a lot of the dialogue in this episode focused on what Autobots tend to do in their spare time. Which, even in the old G1, it was rare to actually see what they were doing when they weren't shooting at each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, Bulkhead wants to go to a monster truck rally. We have grown Autobots playing catch, essentially.
Lobbing.
Okay. Yeah, what was that, that thing that we watched, that we saw that first real movie trailer?
I don't know what you're talking
about. That multiple hours long event has all the commercials in the middle of it that are multi-million dollar productions.
Oh, Super Bowl!
What are those people doing?
Playing football.
I'm just checking.
Yeah, but that's not a ball-shaped ball, they're sure. That's a, you know, it's got pointy ends. It's different.
Yeah, and the ball doesn't have to be two-handed and weigh 10 tons.
It'd be more badass if it was.
Oh, I'd watch football if it was.
Hells yeah.
That would be interesting.
What you're talking about, that's more of that world-building stuff. Like, showing what happens outside of the parts that you know, you can just pull out as clips and go like, hey kids, check this out, guns and robots. Like, stuff to flesh them out and show what they do, quote-unquote off-screen, even though they're on-screen.
Right, well, it's you know, ever so, especially mentioning Unicron Trilogy again.
Oh dear.
It's kind of, yeah, careful. It's kind of refreshing to actually see them not only just acknowledged as characters themselves and not just soldiers all the time.
The men.
They're actually capable of being at ease, as it was.
They are more than just the men.
Exactly.
No,
more
definitely.
Than just someone pulling a trigger.
Definitely. I mean, we got little hints of it too here and there. Like that's something I've enjoyed about these last couple episodes, is that these haven't really been high stakes outright, we're all going to go out as a squadron and do a combat piece episodes. They've always kind of had a kind of, some of you stay here, some of us are going out, and then the ones who quote unquote stay here in the base are, they're doing stuff, and you get to see what they're doing.
Oh yeah.
Aaron, have you got a talking point that isn't going to steal one of mine and everybody else's?
It might.
Oh no!
Prime had a couple more over-the-top speeches. I thought we were past it, but
I got a kick out of the one he did when they first had Wheeljack come in, though, or Makeshift Jack.
Yeah, that was,
when he said, "Welcome to our fold," I was like, you're a thesaurus kind of guy.
Yes, we have lost many friends, but we have made many more. And bad stuff happened, and then good stuff happened.
Well,
and
he is.
Ratchet was cranky, and Bumblebee beeped. But it's most important that I speak like it's the most important thing, because it's important.
Well, to be fair, there were only five of them, and he is basically playing army recruiter at that point.
Yeah, and you know, he's seeing Wheeljack for the first time. He's putting on, you know, like, soldier, it's good to see you kind of thing. Yeah. I don't know. I'm still at the point whenever this Prime talks, I'm listening to how he's talking. Yeah. But I was okay with that little, like, that was probably the most over to the top speech he did in the episode for sure.
But well, that was like, he had that line, and then, like, what, the make sure he's not a traitor line, and then, didn't Prime have one more thing at the end of the episode then? Because he was out driving, because Primes don't like to party or whatever.
I kind of like that bit too, actually, as a bit of world building. Yeah. That's what Optimus, like, that to me kind of, helped me understand what this Optimus Prime is coming from. As a character, like that,
yeah.
Everyone's in the base when they're off duty and they're all at ease and they're all well and rested. He's like, "All right, time to go for a drive." And he just like heads out.
Yeah.
See, that's what I would have found hysterical is if once everything calmed down, the new Wheeljack was there. If he started giving the exact same speech, like this is his canned speech that he uses every single time.
We've lost many friends. I don't know if I told you this, but
did you know that we have lost many friends in this journey? Friends, many, lot. Yeah, that's
good. We have lost many friends, insert name here. Oh, wait.
Hold on, that's the wrong part of scripture.
Well, I mean, we'll see what happens if another Autobot shows up, if he does do the same speech, and I'd actually want to give the writers a pat on the back for just running with it. But I was okay with Cullen in this episode. There were a lot of points where I was thinking, like, this could come out a bit strange, but then... I can't remember what the pieces of dialogue were anymore, but there were a couple where I really appreciated that, again, Cullen was putting a lot more life into the performance. Like, there were just a few, like, little offhand lines, I think near the beginning of the episode, where he didn't sound like, as I said, you know, as we've coined it, he's speaking like he's saying movie lines over and over again.
Yeah.
But he also didn't have that many lines in this episode, so... It's tricky. I don't know. Gog, how did you feel about Cullen in this one?
It didn't bother me. I know some other people. They thought it was a return to the. They thought it was overly monologue-y, I think was the statement, but whatever. I mean, I looked at it as it's the first time I've seen another Autobot in a while, and Prime just kind of was in his formal mode of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's formal, he's introducing himself, he wants to establish the fact that he is the leader, and then it's like, okay, you're cool, you're one of us.
Not to pull up something from, like, the end of the episode, but I don't know if Prime's, like, an ultimate leader here, or what the deal is, because, I mean, if we're in a situation where we need to have troops, and we're getting, you know, potentially our butt handed to us... Here's this guy that seems to be a formidable fighter, and Prime's just like, yeah, dude, whatever. You want to go out and explore? Okay, cool.
Yeah, that was one of my points.
Can't he just say, hey, you know,
yeah.
No, you're staying.
Yeah, well, and that goes with what RC had said. She said, Primes don't party, but she didn't say Prime doesn't party. She said, Primes, plural. So, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that Optimus isn't the head guy in charge, I think, because the whole origin between him and Megatron, and we've never seen any evidence that Prime reports to anyone, but there was a bit of an implication there that Optimus might not be the only quote-unquote Prime, and it is a little weird that they are fighting Megatron, and then Megatron, who appears to be dead, along with... his closest lieutenants, and like, what is Wheeljack gonna do? Is he just gonna fly around and look for adventures? I mean, it certainly does.
Yeah.
From a military standpoint, from the Autobots' perspective would be like, well, it's already been a life or death situation for us several times. Yeah, you really kind of need to stay here and help us out, because otherwise, are you just going to literally just fly around space for years and look for something else to do? Well, we need you here. So
we have something to do here.
Yeah.
And from that, or, from it, go ahead.
I think that they could maybe play that off had they said something along the lines of, okay, well, any Autobots you've come across, send them this way to give them the build for more kind of character of the week stuff, but also then, you know, because Wheeljack's got a ship, and we've been told already the Autobots on Earth don't have a ship. They're stuck here. And, you know, I'd like to see this turn into something like Wheeljack heads out, stumbles across another Autobot crew, and says, hey, yo, there's this place called Earth that you should probably head that way. Here's the coordinates. There you go. Maybe Wheeljack becomes a recruiter for the Earth Front or whatever.
Yeah, and I think it's a little too early to judge that now, because while we are kind of getting some world-building stuff, the world hasn't been built yet, and we don't know what the don't know what the system is. And with Bulkhead stating that he left the Wreckers to join Team Prime, it kind of almost sounds a little animated-ish in that there are primes that lead squads, and prime isn't the highest rank on the chain. But at the same time, the history between him and Megatron kind of insinuated that he was. So I hope that we get a little more into this. I'm not judging it at all, and it's the fact that as of right now, and kind of like with Animated, you have the core group of Autobots, and other guys are going to show up and leave, and we'll see them again. Right. I mean, we know we're going to see Wheeljack again at one point, but it's – so I don't – it doesn't bother me that Wheeljack is leaving by any means. I mean, it would cool to – from a fiction standpoint, maybe it doesn't make sense, but from – the show that they're trying to build around this core group of Autobots, yeah, they're not going to be introducing more permanent members of the cast quite yet. But it's that is something that I would like to see, because now that we've been given the little taste of what is out there in the rest of the Autobot system, military, political, whatever, then I'd like to get some clarification on that, because Prime, I mean, he either gave Wheeljack the choice, or Wheeljack just straight up wasn't in his chain of command and therefore had no power over him. So who knows?
I just want to throw in, I recall a line that Skyquake said in his episode where he says, I will never answer to a prime or something like that. So again, Skyquake also used a line that involved a prime rather than Optimus Prime.
Yeah. But at the same time, he also seemed to have didn't he insinuate that Megatron had wanted him to kill Optimus himself. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I mean, I totally believe that there are more primes. We've now gotten, and at the same time, because Optimus fought side by side with Megatron. Mm-hmm. So they were friends at one point. So if Prime is the only Prime, then or if there is only one Prime in the Autobots, that means ever since Megatron has been evil, Optimus Prime has been the Prime. And the fact that Skyquake says, I would never answer to a Prime, kind of insinuates that there would be more than one at that point. So who knows? We're really kind of digging here, and hopefully this stuff will get a little taste.
My only thought on the line A Prime is like that could also be just the boss, and whoever's the boss become, you know, he was Optimus and then became Optimus Prime. Mm-hmm. And when Hot Rod comes around, he'll become Rodimus Prime.
We're sticking our spade into the dirt. We're pulling up a bit so some water can come out, and then we'll just, you know, see where that goes. Like we're juicing the idea tree is what we're doing. Although you guys actually brought up something which was going to be the next thing I was going to bring up, which is that this episode kind of confirmed to us the nature of the Autobots' isolation. Because originally, I think I'd actually said that I took it as they were the only surviving Autobots that they were aware of. And so Wheeljack arriving, and then a few more lines in this episode kind of more so said, We're the only Autobots that we're really aware of, but ever since the burnout of Cybertron, Autobots and probably Decepticons have scattered across the universe. So it's been more so confirmed now that it's not that they're isolated and probably the only surviving ones, but there are probably a bunch more out there, which I don't mind because it makes complete and utter sense. Although I did kind of like, in the back of my head, I kind of like the concept of these are actually the only surviving Autobots at all. Like, they are the survivors. Not to say that I think this idea is poor or anything, but it was a notion I kind of enjoyed. And I mean, they've said at conventions and at interviews that the implication that they want to get across is that there are still far more Decepticons than Autobots. But it was neat to know now that it's not a total shock if another Autobot shows up somewhere from the cosmos.
Well, I think doing it the other way would have issues in the fact that, you can only sell so many toys.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, we already talked about that because at this point we seem to be a little poor in the pocket when it comes to the characters that need toys. They can knock out the entire cast of the show in two waves, so they kind of need that a bit. But so along the lines of what we were saying, though, I did get a kick out of Miko's line, like, you need to find your own human.
Yeah.
it's approaching meta humor to a bit.
Well, that little bit of self-awareness that they do now and then makes me, like the way that they're doing the kids overall, I'm really enjoying, more or less. I mean, there's bits of the kids that I still don't totally dig. Like, I wasn't the biggest fan of, hey, let's all dance, but.
Are you gonna like the robot?
It's gonna be in there, I'm not gonna flip out and get mad. Oh my god, Miko was playing a guitar and then Bumblebee was dancing with the little kid. It's like, that's gonna happen. But anyway, that was the whole notion of other Autobots was the thing I was thinking about. Gog, do you have another talking point you'd like to bring up?
Not really. I think most of the stuff I have written down we've discussed. I would just say that again, more little compliments on some of the visual details. I got a kick out of Miko kind of popping up on Bulkhead's shoulder, and as he's walking around the base, you see this tiny little girl just kind of holding on and riding on his shoulder like a pet. we had a close up shot of Bulkhead's face while she was on his shoulder, and got this. You could see like the deformed silhouette of her, reflecting off of his face, and again, just cool little.
Please watch the show in HD if you can.
Dang it. Gog took that from me when we were talking beforehand. I downloaded the HD for my second watch through, and that was the first thing I noticed.
Yeah. Neat little things like that. There was actually a few reflections. I probably can't remember them all, but I know that there was a one point where you could see the enemies and the reflections of Wheeljack's swords. Mm-hmm. We saw Starscream bleed.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody else noticed that, but
he had some dribble out of his mouth.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Classic cartoon, I'm injured blood effect.
Yep. He was bleeding straight up from his mouth, coughing up some blue stuff, so. That was neat. And then, I know another reflection. When we got a close-up of the aerial drones, Raticons, whatever, that shot Wheeljack's ship down when they landed, they seemed, and I'll have to go back and look at the land drones, but the air drones seemed to have shinier heads, or maybe I just hadn't noticed it before, but again, that was a cool little reflective effect. You could see like the horizon and stuff reflecting off of their faces. So it's just neat little stuff that looks good, especially if you're watching it in high definition.
Please watch it in high definition if you can. Yeah. I only restate this so often because I think this is the first Transformer show ever that the option's been there and it's really been worth your time to do so.
Is this the first one that's ever been broadcast in HD?
I want to say animated was broadcast in HD as well.
Because when it was released on DVD, we just got the regular 4x3 standard version. It may have just been that they didn't feel the need to release an HD version. But
I recall they say that it was animated in widescreen, at least in season 2 or something like that.
I can't remember.
Yeah, I remember seeing it full on widescreen, but I can't remember if it was.
Someone should go to formspring.me/DerekJWyatt and ask him.
And also, already here the next day, Conjob is on iTunes for buy in HD.
Hot damn.
I know that
how much is it?
$3.
I'll wait for the discs.
Or you can rent it for $1.
Rent?
Yeah, that's not bad. Yeah, with iTunes you can rent it for, 48 hours or something?
Something like that.
And then you can stick it on your iPhone.
From where you start it.
Yeah, and then you can stick it on your iPhone or your iPod, and then watch it on your computer. It'll sync to your iPod, and then you can watch where you left off on your phone on the way out. It's kind of neat, but $1 is not bad. If you miss an episode, just renting it for $1. I mean, I'd personally grab the torrent, but
yeah, I would too. But if you want to support the show, you know, in the most casual way possible, the $1 rental ideally would support the show. I actually don't know if it would support the show.
Well, Apple will get its 30% cut, and
for 66 cents down towards those guys making that cartoon that you're watching.
Or for $70, you can buy the season pass.
Wow. Or you could buy the season in HD for cheaper than that, probably.
Yeah.
When it's released. Which is what I'm going to do.
Aaron, did you have any other points you wanted to bring up?
We now know the Bumblebee sequence noise for Oh Snap.
I'm starting to notice those patterns now. Like, I'm starting to tell, like, oh, he's... Like, I'm starting to turn into a Raph, where I'm like, oh, yeah, that beat means that he thinks this. I'm like, oh, my God.
Did your self-esteem take a plunge today or something?
What's that?
Ask Chris if his self-esteem took a plunge if he's identifying with Raph.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I'm going to go over here.
I'm not going to play video games. I'll just go cut myself.
I'm going to go play adventures in the cargo bay.
But, courage, yeah, because it was... RC made a comment at Bulkhead, or Bulkhead had, he still had shrapnel in his backside or whatever, and then RC said, yeah, because you have so much of it, and Bulkhead made his bleep, bloop, bloop.
and along those lines, I guess I've just never noticed it before. I don't know if we've ever got a full-on shot of RC from the back, but RC has a wheel on her back.
I saw you tweet that.
And maybe I just didn't notice it before because I hadn't paid attention since we've seen toy picks, but it's in a different position from the toy. But I always thought that was the toy cheating, and it's not. She has a wheel on her back, so I don't know. I just got a kick out of that because
I dig it.
Because
I mean, they said, you know, they tried to make it so that at least the conversion from vehicle to robot involved actual things transforming and not cheating too much. So it makes sense, and if it also allows for the toy to be more on model to a degree, then I'm all for it.
Yeah. That was my thought, that it was done for the toy people, but Gog doesn't think so.
Well, let's talk about this off mic.
Is this going to be our bottomless fire?
There's some stuff that we shouldn't talk about publicly, so we'll talk about that later.
Bottomless fire extinguisher. Omegas, did you have anything else you wanted to bring up from the episode?
I had a couple little notes left. Which one? I did like how attached Bulkhead and Miko were in this episode, because it's easy to get that from the others. I mean, okay, Raph and Bumblebee, they always get along. The five-parter was basically dedicated to Jack and RC bonding.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time I actually saw any kind of devotion out of Bulkhead toward Miko.
Yeah. Well, I think this was, like you said, each other episode has kind of had a pairing build. This is the first one that's really been Bulkhead-centric in a kind of backwards way, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
So I think it makes sense that they'd show that connection there. If they're spotlighting Bulkhead's human as Miko, 1 + 2 = 3.
And also, to Miko's credit again, after being really hard on the character in the premiere, this episode had a lot of Miko in it, and I really didn't mind most of the Miko content. Like, I was actually pretty into it.
Yeah, I mean, as long as Miko isn't just being outright insensitive during Autobot deaths and looking to go out and see people massacred in the middle of horrid moments that the Autobots are feeling, she's not bad other than that, so...
Yeah, she's been on, like many other characters I was more critical of in the premiere. I think that generally a lot of the cast has been on the up and up if they weren't already on the up and up.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I don't know, were there any other little notes you had that you wanted to bring up? Or?
I was trying to figure out why Wheeljack even went to Earth in the first place.
Because everything arrives on Earth.
Just cruises.
I know, a Cybertronian magnet. Just... But
I think that
it seemed like the second he got there, he was like, "Oh no, I'm leaving."
I think that this is me kind of making up some stuff that seems logical. Would be that he was looking for some kind of signal, and I'm sure that the Earth Autobots have some kind of signal somewhere, going like, "Hey, just so you know, any other Autobots, movie."
Didn't Prime have that movie bit?
I don't remember.
Yeah, he did at the end of the mini, he gave basically the speech from the end of the first movie.
They just copy-pasted Cullen's audio.
Yeah.
Well, the guest is an Autobot hear him and came down. He's like, "All right."
I thought that monologue was more about we're going to be here to defend this planet, you know, our new home, rather than, you know, if anyone's just floating around up there, you know, feel free to stop by.
I'm sure, it's. You know, the implication, for instance, that Wheeljack and Bulkhead hadn't seen each other for centuries would be that Wheeljack probably hasn't seen anybody for centuries at this point. So, you know, he hears from any Autobots, he's like, I'm down for it. At least I'll see if anyone I know is there.
Yeah, but then he turns around and takes off into space.
That was weird. I didn't really dig that.
It was like he was driving by the neighborhood. Maybe he was just passing through the solar system and then...
Yeah.
I literally saw that, and then they made a phone call.
All he meant to do was just, like, honk his horn and stick his hand out the windshield.
I don't even know if it was going to be to honk a horn and stick a hand out the windshield. It was.
I reacted exactly like Miko did when they're like, "Time to scan in alt mode." He's like, "Yeah, about that." Me and Miko at the same time were like, "You're leaving?" Like,
Yeah.
I don't mind the fact, like I said, the way that they're telling the story with the core group, I don't mind that Wheeljack is leaving. I kind of wish that they would have given a better reason that, and that would have been a good idea because that would have even given them something to follow up on later. Wheeljack a little bit of a mission that he's on, and it could have been an excuse to bring him back later. It's a minor nitpick though. I'm sure he had a reason, whatever it was. I just would have liked to know what it was.
Like I said, the Wheeljack recruitment drive, you know, sending him out into space since you got a ship. Not going to take your ship away from you because it's your baby or whatever, but you know, anybody you find, send this way.
Well, he is a wrecker, so he might have that mentality of a soldier that, well, all my friends die anyway, so I better not stick around.
Yeah, but we don't know. It comes down to we don't know that wreckers are, like, last stand of the wreckers. Wreckers could just be, you know, their letter W in the 26 lettering scheme that, you know, Transformers wouldn't have, but...
We're the xylophones!
Yeah, there's also Team Alpha, Team Bravo, Team Charlie, Team Delta, and Wreckers is just a W. Mm. You know, it seems as if they're similar to the Wreckers that we know, but then
we're at the disadvantage of the show being new, pretty much.
Yeah, so if in the next one, you know, we have Swedish Chef show up and turns out he was a chef for the Wreckers, you know, we don't know.
I'd flip out if the Swedish Chef showed up. I'd seriously flip out.
Well, they've established that the Wreckers are a group of skilled fighters.
Right.
We know that Bulkhead was part of the Warrior cast. We have seen that Wheeljack is more than a capable fighter, able to stand his ground against several dudes at the same time. So
they have Jedi lightsaber skills.
It's safe to assume that the Wreckers are full of badasses.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I just don't know if they're the double badasses or just single badasses.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll find out future episodes. I had two little Wheeljack bits I wanted to just throw out there. These were just very abstract thoughts. My first thing was, when Wheeljack's ship first appeared being chased down by aerial Erraticons, his ship had his color scheme, and I was like, is that his alt mode? And I was like, yeah, oh, no, wait.
I thought the same thing.
I was like, that's kind of a cool alt mode. And if he's the size of, oh, wait, he's just driving it. Okay, well, whatever. And my other one was, I just want to throw out there how badass it was that he called out. He got in a verbal snap fight with an Erraticon, got the Erraticon to come over to him, just so that he could put the Erraticon in head scissors, snap its neck, and then while it's twitching to death, shooting its laser everywhere, blow up the command console that's keeping him bound in place.
Yeah.
What I loved about that was he snapped its neck before he even got it to shoot the command console. So I was like, you knew that if you broke its neck, it would, in its death spasms, shoot lasers everywhere, and you aimed the flailing dead thing to shoot the... Good job. Like, that was right out of an 80s action movie. Like, that's a...
Yeah.
That was a Van Damme, Lundgren, you know, Reb Brown, Steven Seagal kind of move. I like that.
I look forward to the Wheeljack toy.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I do want to point out that, you know, now that we know Erraticons are sentient, individual, living, you know, creatures.
You say that with disdain.
Kinda.
Sentient, I guess.
Sentient, yeah, maybe. Yeah, whatever. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, were six slaughtered just to get makeshift in with the Autobots here?
Yeah,
and at least two or three after the Autobots showed up, because we don't know how many beforehand.
Wheeljack.
So
makeshift didn't know when the Autobots would show up, though.
Right.
So it's like, okay, everyone play dead now.
I'm sure
all that
some
we
of
saw
those...
once the Autobots dropped in, though, was the double sword skewered one, and then walking up, and then OU missed one. And the OU missed one could have been one of Wheeljack's.
Well,
and
I'm
even
sure.
The one that he double skewered could have been, just like, I'm going to stand you up on the swords. Oh.
I'm sure part of it might have been that, like, you know, in the worst case where Starscream is literally like, no, just kill a bunch of our dudes, it's cool. They probably just didn't tell the Erraticons about the makeshift thing.
Yeah.
So a bunch of Erraticons had a very bad day. But yeah.
Ted from accounting again?
Yeah, it's Frank. The whole thing of them being, I don't know, it's like I went from being shocked and in awe to like becoming like that jerk who's watching the 80s action film where I'm like, look at all the dudes he's killing. I don't know.
Yeah, that's something else I'd like to see some clarification on as far as who the Erraticons are, why do they all look the same.
Yeah.
And I hope that they at least drop a little bit of a tidbit on that, because if they are fully sentient individuals with sparks, then... There's some.
If we get an episode where I legitimately feel bad for an Erraticon, that's going to probably be one of my favorite episodes, I think. Just when I think about the possibilities of a story like that, if they can actually, you know, get into something a little bit heavy, and just like, you know, what are the Erraticons? Why are some of them there? And then make you think about, you know, who are these dudes getting slaughtered en masse? Like, I think that would be a great episode. I don't know if that would be in the scope of what they're trying to do, but something I would love to see.
Well, generally, when you have characters like that, they'll eventually have one of those, you know, Johnny Five moments where, you know, slight malfunction or tweak of programming, and he's starting to switch sides a little bit, and you kind of have a chance to get a little bit deeper into an Erraticon's head, which I could see in a series like this that they would try that at least once.
Definitely, I mean, like it's a series that's made clear the values of life and death, so. You know, I don't mean to make this as a direct comparison, but something, you know, with similar themes to some of the story points in an episode like Transmutate, for instance, I think could be plausible, but I guess we'll see. Did anyone else have any points they want to bring up about Conjob?
I don't know. I was just about the only other thing that I had there was Combe still plays Ratchet really well.
Hell yeah.
Just a little bit there where makeshift was being a slimy SOB about trying to figure out the ground bridge stuff. You know, oh, this is a feat of... You did this all yourself?
Yes, I did.
Right, just like, well, yeah, I did. Somebody admires me. All right. Look at me. Even though makeshift was just going for the intel. Beyond that, we've pretty much burnt through all my notes.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty spent on this one. Not to say that I thought it was a shallow episode. I thought this was, again, a perfectly fine episode.
Oh, I guess I do kind of have one more note.
Oh.
It seems like they were rather quick to throw back somebody that could have had intel and then can also change into somebody else. Granted, we learn later that they activated a grenade on his hip, but it doesn't seem like he was aware of that. You know, what would have happened if Makeshift saw the grenade and pitched that real quick? They would have just given back to the cons a dude that can change shape and potentially has information about the, you know, if not the location, the layout of their base.
I did really enjoy that grenade bit at the end, I gotta say. And I really enjoyed how it played out with Starscream, you know, just like backing away from him like he's got a virus on him. And Makeshift's like, what? Starscream's like, get out of it, fall back! He like, takes off. Makeshift's like, what's wrong, guys?
The grenade plan wouldn't have failed, Aaron, because it was accomplished by a Wrecker.
That's right.
Okay.
What a Wrecker wants, a Wrecker gets.
Now I've got to go back to the episode and check. Okay.
But at some point,
Wheeljack planted that bomb on Makeshift because he took that from the Decepticon ship. Now I got to watch the whole episode. Wait a minute.
They bring up because that's Wheeljack style, as he always has that one grenade that he threw into the heat exchanger or whatever.
Yeah, both the real Wheeljack and the makeshift Wheeljack they always had that, because I didn't notice that the first time I watched it either, and I didn't even notice the grenade until the end, and when I watched it the second time, I was like, oh yeah, he's got that thing with him the entire time. So
again, this is to the credit of the animators of the episode. Like, you know, it's not like he magically has a grenade out of nowhere.
They could have gotten away with that by saying that they planted that on him before they threw it there, but it was a nice touch, the fact that he had that on him the entire time. It's like, that's, you copied him a little too well this time, Makeshift, sorry.
Yeah, I again, just for overall, I want to throw more props that I didn't have any points in this episode that where I, you know, I hit that thing of like, oh, it's a CG show. Like, it's a well-produced show.
Yeah.
And I'm quite enjoying it. Just thinking, I mean, overall, I generally enjoyed the episode. I mean, we've said there were some bits that it seems, you know, all of us kind of had similar ups and downs with the episode. But again, it, you know, definitely was not a bum episode. It was quite fun to watch. Had some very good concepts, introduced things like the soft continuity, and again, has me pumped to see some more. So we'll see what happens next week.
Did we see a preview for next week?
There was one at the end. It involved something about the Autobots are... spoilers! The Autobots are facing a new foe, and it turns out that they're fighting a bunch of anti-Transformer human terrorists.
Oh, right, I remember, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it was like a green car...
Yeah, green car, and then a guy.
The first thing I thought of was, "Oh, look, it's RPM's recluse." But
I thought it was Ben 10's car. It was like Revenge on Cartoon Network.
Yeah, it was a Black Stripes, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. So looks like we may, if they really want to nail me on a reference, if they call them something like the Machination or something like that, I'm gonna go like IDW.
It can't be the Machination because they got retconned out of continuity. They never existed.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
They're always Skywatch.
That's right. Skywatch. That's what I meant. Did I
say Machinations? Skywatch became something completely opposite of what it was.
I have to put a sticker over Machinations.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if we haven't got anything else to drop, then I think we can probably call this one. Fine episode.
I'll drop my elbow.
Nice. So, thanks for listening. This has been Vangelis. That was Omega's Gog Dog and Aaron. We will be back again with Prime Time once the next episode airs, because we are all into this show pretty well. And hope you are too, if you're listening. If you haven't been watching the episodes and you're adamantly just going like, well, listen to you talk about it, but I don't want to watch the episodes, then go watch them in HD already. Seriously, just stop trying to be cool.
Links are out there to get copies of
links are out there. iTunes is there if you really don't even want to do that much work. So have a good night, everybody. Prime out. And all that up, I know what the fuck
it means, but you got some badass perpetrators, and they're here to stay.